Hello, welcome once again to the Bird and the Beard. I'm the Beard, and with me as always is the Bird. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm living. It's warm. I'm waiting for fall to come, basically.
Well, it's not too bad today. I mean, I did, you know, sit in a bucket of ice for a few hours, so that was that cooled me down a bit, but it's just nice today.
How long did you sit in that tub for, girl? Come on, now.
Well, I had a shower straight after, so it wasn't that bad, but probably about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Because my mum, like, there was water all over the place, so my mum was like, right, stay there, I'm cleaning up. So, yeah.
So she was able to splash a bucket of water on you?
Yeah. And then we didn't see the sexy after video of me struggling to get out of my soaking clothes because it was stuck to me. And my jeans were like shrunk to my legs, my jeans, my shorts. So I was trying to wriggle out of there. It was painful. It's so bad. I was like, this is not a sexy dance. No one wants to see this.
Not at all. No. Oh, boy. So have you watched anything good this week at all?
This week I've mostly been rewatching things. I think I've pretty much run out of things on Netflix that I haven't seen before. So it was mostly rewatches this week. But last week and last time we recorded this episode, I did talk about a couple of films if you want me to go through those again.
If you'd like to. I was curious about that one you're pimping on Facebook, that Crawl or Die one you were talking about.
Oh, of course, Crawl or Die, yeah. It's directed by Oklahoma Ward, written, directed, edited by him, I think. And it stars his girlfriend, Nicole Alonso. It's sort of alien-esque in, like, you know, they're sort of in a trapped environment and there's some creepy, dripping, evil, you know, carnivore creature behind them. So it's sort of alien meets, let's think, maybe like what's the one I'm looking for? The Descent. That's the one. That sort of escape versus, like, you know, creature feature thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's set in the future. Earth has been destroyed, and they're going to Earth 2 to protect something known as the Package, which is a woman who is the last virus-free fertile woman in existence. So obviously she's very important. It's kind of plot minimal, like you get all of this backstory but none of it's like over explained. You just sort of deal with it and then go into the actual plot, which is something I quite like in a film, because I think it's weird when you have characters sitting down for 10 minutes explaining things that they've known for their whole lives. You know, it kind of brings you out of the fiction of the story because they're clearly doing that for the audience.
Are there frog people in this movie?
There are no frog people now.
Because there's a movie in the 80s called Hell Comes to Frogtown, which stars Rowdy Roddy Piper, where he plays the last fertile male on the planet, basically, so that they're to protect him across, like, this wasteland. But across this wasteland is a land of frog people, like bipedal frog people.
Okay, nice.
And it's a wacky 80s goodness, and I'd recommend anyone to watch a dumb movie. Watch Hell Comes to Frogtown, and you might enjoy yourself.
Cool. Well, maybe that's if this is a threequel, so maybe, or it will be a trilogy, I mean, maybe that's the end sequence is the last fertile male and female meet up.
Oh, trust me, I'm the only one who wants a sequel to Hell Comes to Frogtown. Nobody else.
So yeah. This is definitely not a comedy in any regards. It's very, very claustrophobic. Some of it, you know, was really difficult to watch in a good way, you know, because it was so, like, intense and just, you know, uncomfortable. And I felt myself sort of feeling quite squashed in, even though I was just, you know, chilling at home watching the film. I was like, really getting quite uncomfortable just watching it. And, you know, she wriggles around in these tiny little tunnel spaces for an hour and a half or whatever. And I'm like, you know, the exertion and the effort that she put in to do that, just massive props. Really impressed. But I won't go into too much detail. I do have a review available on YouTube.
Yep.
With my little home movie, shall we say. So if you want to find me on YouTube, my username is TheEmily, which is the same as my Twitter one. It's THEEMI1Y. And I believe This one is just called Emily Does Crawl or Die. So if you just YouTube search that, it should come up. And you'll get a more in-depth review than what I've just given there. But basically, yeah, really enjoyed it. It's pretty taut, and I think you should all watch it.
What else have you been watching?
I watched a film called Mr. Jones, which is a very unusual sort of kind of art house-ish movie, I guess. It's not, you know, your stereotypical Hollywood horror by any means. It's about a couple who retreat into the wilderness so the boyfriend or the male, the fiancé or whatever, I don't know what he is, can focus on this documentary that he wants to make, but he doesn't really know what he wants to do it on. And then they discover these weird scarecrow-type things, and his girlfriend, who is an avid photographer, recognizes the pieces as work by someone called Mr. Jones, and nobody really knows anything about him. That's not even his real name, obviously. It's just once upon a time he sent out all of these weird scarecrow things to various people and then disappeared, and now suddenly they found this elusive artist's, you know, home. So they try to investigate and do a documentary on that and on, you know, the mystery surrounding him. But as they do, reality sort of starts to disintegrate a little bit around them, and it's all about sort of the dreamscape versus waking life and what's real and different, like, realms and dimensions and things like that. And it's one of the few films I've seen. I think Waking Life and this are possibly the only two films I've ever seen where you actually feel like you're in a dream watching it. You know, there's loads of movies that have dream sequences and things, but it's not dreamlike in any sense. Like, when you're actually asleep and having a dream, there's that particular feeling that you get, especially if it's like a nightmare or whatever. And this is one of the only films I've seen where that actually gives you that feeling.
Cool.
Yeah. So I don't think it's going to be for everyone. It is a little bit weird, but I really enjoyed watching it. And it was something different, and I enjoyed the sense that it give you of actually being in a nightmare. It was definitely interesting.
Great. Anything else of a highlight that you watched, or?
I don't know if it was a particular highlight for me, but I think a lot of people would enjoy it. It's a film called Rapture Palooza. It's basically sort of an awkward teen comedy about the apocalypse. It's sort of like John Dies at the End meets Scott Pilgrim sort of thing. So it centers around this young couple who are trying to sort of live through the apocalypse and survive, you know, like there's random things going on, like fire raining down from the sky and random, you know, flocks of crows swearing at you as you do, and, you know, locusts and various other plagues. And then the beast, as he's referred to in this film, decides that he wants the protagonist in this, Anna Kendrick, as his girlfriend/wife. So it's about their plot to try and stop that happening. It's very, very, very weird. There's a lot of explicit dialogue, shall we say, a lot of gruesome details about things that was kind of weird, like awkward, funny in places, but mostly just awkward for me personally. But it was definitely different, you know, and it may not be my favourite film of all time, but I think I could see a lot of people enjoying this. It was quite sort of in the same vein as like Epic Movie and Disaster Movie and all those types of films, for like the feel of the style of comedy, like the slapstick comedy and things, but definitely a lot more reined in than those, not nearly as bad.
Yeah. Gil was telling me about it too.
When I compare the two, I'm not saying that it's as bad as like Epic Movie and all those. It's not. But it is that sort of style.
Yeah, that's a thing. And it's on Netflix too, right?
Yes, it is. That's where I watched it. It's all on Netflix, all of these, apart from Crawl or Die, which might be on Netflix soon.
I got mine back on, so I can watch Netflix again. Yay! You know, yay. It's good stuff. As far as what I watched, I watched a lot of stuff on YouTube because I'd have Netflix for a little while. One of the things that dropped on YouTube was film from the early 90s called Ricochet, which if you guys don't know what that is, it's a, basically a story about with Denzel Washington, where he plays a cop who stops a would-be assassin played by John Lithgow from completing his mission and puts him in, goes to jail, and the whole time he's in jail, he's pulling the whole Cape Fear angle of, you know, I will get out and I will plan my revenge. But while he's in there, he's making all these alliances with the Aryan Brotherhood, and him and Jesse the Body Ventura have this great fight deal in a basement somewhere with books strapped to their chests and stuff. It's like some real Thunderdome type shit, but John Lithgow's a badass. And
I love John Lithgow.
And it's a really trippy movie. It's got him, Kevin Pollak's in it. Ice-T plays a drug dealer who helps him in the end. That's always fun. Yeah, it's just really violent, and John Lithgow's really sadistic and smart, and yeah, early Denzel, rocking.
Oh, yeah, violence is good.
What else? I watched The Birdcage last night. I enjoy that. I think it's still very funny. I think you think like the main stars of the film steal the show, but I think Hank Azaria steals the show, in my opinion, as their quirky maid, and he makes me laugh, you know.
I do like him. I quite like Hank. Like, he was in Godzilla, wasn't he?
He was in Godzilla. Yeah, the 93 one, yes. I had to rethink that. Like, yes, he was in that movie, now that I remember correctly.
I haven't seen the new one yet, so as far as I'm concerned, that is Godzilla, so.
Yeah.
I watched it a lot when I was a kid, so.
To each their own.
I don't know if I particularly liked it. I liked him, and I liked Jean Reno. So I was like, I'm just going to watch this a lot.
You like the little Godzillas running around Madison Square Garden?
God, I don't even remember that bit.
A little bit, never mind. I'm not going to get into that. That'd be a part of our show.
Like I say, I haven't watched it in about 10 years, but when I did watch it, I watched it a lot. God. I think it's sort of my gateway horror movies, you know, like Godzilla and Eight-Legged Freaks and things like that. I watched them a lot. Van Helsing as well. Ugh.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's
shameful.
Yeah, definitely shameful.
Which is a shame because it has a really good cast.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's a big shame, though. What else was there? There was some other stuff. It's always hard to remember. I watched Leprechaun Origins today. Not too long ago, actually. The new reboot, rehash Leprechaun movie from WWE Studios.
I watched it last night, so I'm right there with you.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this for a second. What was your take on it, basically? And I'll tell you what mine is.
I'm sure Boss Butcher will like this, but it basically reminded me of Blood Gnomes, the creature itself. I mean, it.
Yes.
It just looked like one of those. I was like, what the hell? Oh, it's not what I was expecting from a leprechaun. I mean, I can understand why they didn't go for the whole, you know, Warwick Davis look, because it is kind of hard to make that scary. But it didn't strike any leprechaun tones at all with me. But having said that, it was, you know, a decent horror flick.
You see, the gore was good, but then again, there was some bad editing at the end. And you know what I'm talking about, don't you? And I'm gonna spoil this because it's a piece of crap, and I don't think you guys should watch it anyway. I give it a 2.5 out of 10.
Wow, okay, I didn't go that low.
I went pretty low because I didn't really enjoy myself at all. It's a 78-minute movie with a 12-minute credit sequence, and they can just go suck a dick for that, all I care, you know, just for what do you call those things, a bumper, or whatever you call those things, that just played through the credits like they would show, like, names, and then you see a piece of they call it a stinger, you see a piece of the stinger, and then it really didn't pay off. You just see another leprechaun-type creature pop up, and then that was a thing, and...
Yeah, I didn't even bother watching that bit, to be honest.
Yeah, I sat there like I got 78 minutes invested. I'm just gonna keep on watching this and watch some more, and then wait for something to happen, and then nothing really happened. And like you said, the creature they had supposedly, unless he really Andy Serkis this up, supposed to play the leprechaun was a wrestler. If you're a wrestling fan, he's the guy who used to come out with Finley all the time. This little person, known as Hornswoggle. He used to come out with him, and he did, like, instead of the frog splash, he did the tadpole splash. So, you knowing that if you're a wrestling fan, you know who he is, and you know that he's a little person, you expect to see a little person, you know, ravaging these people. And but you get this thing that's, you know, right up there on two legs, who looks like an overgrown blood gnome, like you said. It looks like a freaking blood
there's
gnome.
There's no other way to describe
it. You've seen blood gnome, or you haven't, you know, but he's a little smushed face gargoyle type deal thing with pointy ears and stupid looking. And then the point I'm talking about, the gore looked cool. They had this slash across the belly, which was done a thousand times, but looked pretty good in this movie. He rips out some guy's spine at some point, which is pretty cool in this movie. But the part at the end where she, you know, kills the creature, of course, you got the final girl, who the best part of her acting is her bouncing boobs, you know. Because they were quite lovely. Her running was probably the best part of this whole movie, you know.
I honestly didn't notice.
But she goes to cut the creature's head off after she throws some gold coins at him and he utters the line, "This is about as bad as do your thing, cuz," from Texas Chainsaw. "Fuck you, Lucky Charms." I think they say that in the original movie, I think. So I think the little boy, when he shoots the four-leaf clover into Warwick
Davis. Into his mouth, yeah.
Yes. "Fuck you, Lucky Charms." And she cuts the creature's head off. At the mouth, okay? She cuts it like from the jawline, and then
it's just a neck stump.
Yeah. All of a sudden, it comes off, and it's the whole head. It's not just part of the head. That's just some really shitty editing right there. Like,
why would you do that anyway? I think like the jaw beheading is so much cooler. Like leaving the tongue and the bottom teeth attached to the neck, and it's just
The fact that when it fell, it was the whole head. It's like, okay, just see this like a split second ago. I'm not saying this is gonna be your masterpiece horror film of the year. Just do a little better than that. You're better than that, WWE Studios. That's all I'm saying. Oh, boy. Yeah, I should have watched Jersey Shore Massacre. And I heard that's good, too, from a couple people. So, you know, might talk about it next episode.
Which one is that?
It's like a Jersey Shore mock-up where there's a killer and Ron Jeremy's in it. I probably for like a cameo or something. And
is there a Jersey Shore Shark Attack, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a Jersey Shore Shark Attack as well.
That was amazing. That was so funny. I love bad shark movies. They're just my thing. Oh, that was good. But it didn't take itself seriously. That's why it was good.
Yeah, that's why it's good. It don't take itself too seriously. Besides that, I haven't watched much else. A lot of Simpsons, because they've been showing the Simpsons marathons in full effect on FXX is the channel here. And they're showing 12 Days of Simpsons, every episode ever made, so me and my friends are all aflutter with nostalgia for The Simpsons.
I noticed it's trending on Twitter quite a lot.
And I think I watched like 5 hours in a row at some points, just like leave it on. Because there are episodes you haven't seen in a long time. So like, okay, this is nice. And you know, The Simpsons. Oh, The Simpsons. Yes.
I haven't really seen many new episodes because when I was a kid growing up, it was on every Friday night, I think, or maybe Saturday night at 6 o'clock. And I used to watch it every week, and then they stopped doing that.
Yeah, I don't watch it for a while, then all of a sudden I turn it back on again. You know the characters and stuff, so it's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But it manages to stay fresh, and it surprised the hell out of me that it manages to stay fresh, you know.
Well, I know a lot of characters have certain arcs. I mean, I think one of Marge's sisters is gay now.
Oh, I don't remember that. Maybe that's the case. I don't look that far into it.
I think I did see the episode where she gets a boob job, Marge.
Oh yeah, I remember that one, yeah. That's funny.
But yeah, most of the new ones I haven't really seen. I think I didn't really see for maybe about a year before the film came out. From then onwards, I haven't really seen any episodes.
Yeah, American culture is pretty much raised on The Simpsons, and I had a friend in elementary school whose parents would not let him watch The Simpsons, and not let him wear Simpsons t-shirts, nothing like that.
Wow.
But they were kind of uptight, but you know, you raise your kids how you want to raise them, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
I love Ralph Wiggum, so I can't help these things. I got to watch The Simpsons.
Oh, Ralph.
I listen to this Bloodhound Gang song where it's just quotes from Ralph Wiggum throughout the whole song.
And nice.
It holds together really well.
I like the Linkin Park one.
I haven't heard that one.
Have you not heard it? What song is it? God, I can't remember now. That's going to really annoy me. I can't believe you haven't heard it. I'll just search for it quickly.
Okay. Oh, that's about it for me, though. We'll get right into our films, then, I guess. But yeah.
That's one step closer. There we go.
One step closer? Okay.
Mm, I'll send you the link.
We get right into our films, which are films that were filmed where we live. The Bird being in Newcastle and me being around Chicagoland. Bird, tell them about your film and what's it all about.
I chose another Michael Caine film. I chose Get Carter this time from 1971. I should have looked this up and refreshed myself since last episode, but because we did record this before, but it went wrong, unfortunately. So yeah, we're trying to re-recording it, which is why it's so late. So it's not our fault. but yes, it was remade in 2006, I believe, with Sylvester Stallone. And moved over to America. But this is the original one set in Newcastle. And it's about a man called Jack Carter. He's moved down to London, but his brother, still in Newcastle, dies under mysterious circumstances. Yes, it is 1971. So he travels back to his hometown to investigate what's going on.
Yeah, that's about the gist of it. Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. It was Michael Caine acting, you know, very pimp and very debonair, but still managing to fuck people up in a wonderful way. yeah, I like the music in this one. I like the music in both these films, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They're both pretty nice soundtracks to listen to. I'm sure if they were like an isolated score somewhere, I could listen to it and really enjoy myself. And I like the whole plot of it, basically, you know, the whole seedy underworld of the building business and eventually the porn business that ended up being his niece, right, that was in that, all that stuff.
Yeah, in the remake, I think it might be his daughter, possibly.
I didn't see
it. In the original one, it's his niece.
So he's sent there to he seems like he's being like a detective, but he's more like a hard ass, and he is. He's a hard ass in this movie. One of my favorite scenes of the whole movie is where he pulls the guy's head through the car window, and
yes,
that was a pretty badass to watch on screen.
My favorite scene is definitely the naked scene. Speaking as a lesbian, my favorite scene was the one with the penis.
big old swinging dick.
Oh, you don't see anything, don't worry. But basically, he's getting it on with his landlady, I guess. He's renting a place while he's there, and he gets a visit from two heavy hitters. So he marches them out of the house in all his naked glory, while there's children doing a parade down the street. And he's just stood there nonchalantly naked, with a shotgun. That's some beautiful, beautiful acting right there.
That's how I stand naked. I need a big old shotgun where I stand naked too, you know.
I don't need a shotgun, I just use my penis.
Oh boy. Makes you feel like more of a man, see, come on now, you get the big shotgun. I need that elephant gun or something from
I know, covers. See, but if you hoist the penis up, you've got more room to swing your balls around.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I think I'm high.
Oh, that's okay. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Just do it in moderation.
I mean, like, high on ice or something, because that's pretty much the most hardcore thing I've had today.
What is your...
Ice is in actual ice, not, like, crystal meth ice.
Not crystal meth,
no. For the record.
That drug is bad for you.
Yeah.
But you got any standout scenes in this film that you like besides, you know, the balls and shaft of Michael Caine?
Besides the swinging dick. I do like the scene, any scene with Alan Armstrong. This was his first feature film, and he's quite a household name now. Just to add to the localness of this, he actually went to school with my singing teacher. You know, we practically know each other or something. I don't know. But, yeah, he's turned into quite a good actor. You've probably seen him in The Mummy Returns or Van Helsing or... he's in quite a few, like, American movies in little bit parts, but he is quite famous over here. But this was his first role. And it's weird seeing him, you know, because he's quite sort of lined with age now, but he was so young and squishy-looking then. It was adorable. I liked the first scene where he goes to see Kinnear, which is somewhere I'm not, the estate is somewhere I'm not actually familiar with, but he does a little stealth mission reconnaissance to get into the house, which I quite enjoyed. The whole closing sequence was very satisfying. I was going to say I won't give it away, but it's been out for 40 plus years, so I think we'll survive. He basically shoots everyone in sight, which is nice. I like the plot because you really don't see it coming, or I didn't, you know. It starts off sort of some sort of, you know, mysterious death, and you think, oh, maybe he owed someone money, or he fell in with the wrong crowd, blah, 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 you know, the usual stuff. And then, you know, half an hour towards the end, you find out the real reason, and it's to do with the porn industry and his niece, and it's a lot seedier than you initially imagined. And I just think it comes, you know, completely left field, and you're just like, what? Oh, that's very different to what I was imagining was going to come out of the story. So... points for originality, definitely.
Yeah, that was of course, he gets pretty banged up by the end of this movie, and I love his ride. His ride is amazing. His car, him driving too fast up that freaking car park, and you know.
Oh, that was the girl driving, not him.
Oh, that was a girl driving. Yeah, I forgot about that now. You guys driving the wrong side of the car. I get these mixed up sometimes. Yeah.
Oh yeah, of course. I'll let you know.
Stupid American.
See, I'm used to it now because there's so many American movies and things. It just seems totally normal to me to see a guy driving on the wrong side of the road, or the wrong side for me. Mm-hmm. It seems fine. Like, if I play a game, it's easy for me to drive on your side of the road. But I suppose because it's not quite as commonplace for you to watch British films where people drive, because, I mean, the main sort of British industry at the moment is, you know, like Harry Potter and Downton Abbey and things, where people didn't really drive a lot.
Yeah.
So I forget that you're not used to it like I am.
Well, I'm not offended or anything. I just got thrown off a little bit. Oh, and of course, you know this anyway. Michael Caine having phone sex while his landlady is in the room. That was quite entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Brett Eklund, ooh, I've had vivid dreams about her, you know, and this helped things along, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, I'm sure.
She's very good looking in this movie.
Oh, God, my mum sat down next to me while I was watching that scene, and she was just watching it like, what is she doing?
she's having a toss, okay, that's you guys call it or something, you know?
Well, she wasn't going that far, she was just rolling around groping herself a bit.
Mm-hmm.
We'd call it a wank.
Call it a wank. Okay, I'm going to use that now. See,
toss generally comes with off, tossed off.
Okay. Yeah, the action's great in this movie. He's just beating people up, and you wouldn't think a guy. Well, he's pretty tall, Michael Caine, but you know, he wears like these funky overcoats. You wouldn't think he'd be a badass, you know, but he's really a tough guy in this movie. Just shooting people and beating the crap out of people, and all that while just looking for a simple
having many
thing.
Ladies
having many ladies, yes, he's very he's lining them up, man, and I can appreciate that. But hey, a good show. I never seen the Stallone one. I'm kind of glad I didn't, but I hear it's pretty not like this one.
Yeah, it's pretty naff. I only watched it for Miranda Richardson. Ironically, she's in the American version even though she's English, so I suppose in 71 she was like God, I don't even know. I'm not going to work it out because that would be weird. But, you know, her first movie was like in 87 or something, so she was a bit late.
Yeah, besides that, I ain't got a whole lot more to say about this one. But any locations that you notice in your go-arounds in this movie? Did you notice anything at all?
Yeah, there's a bit on... Is it the Tyne Bridge? I've forgotten already now, but Newcastle is famous in Britain for having the most bridges on the one river, I think. They might have been taken over now, but definitely at one point that was true, because we have like a million bridges. It's ridiculous. So every time he was on a bridge, I was going, oh, I've been there. Oh, I got stuck on there once. And there is the car park that you mentioned before, where they with the speedy driving. There was a big controversy a few years ago because they wanted to pull it down. I mean, it is just a car park. It wasn't exactly, you know, the Mona Lisa of buildings, but because, you know, it had a claim to fame for being in this film. Everyone wanted to, you know, keep it as part of our culture and heritage and all, and, you know, and that sort of thing. Like, tourists are going to go to the car park and be like, oh, yeah, this is where Get Carter was filmed. But never mind. So, yeah, that car park no longer exists, but I do remember it. On the whole, you know, it was just sort of flashing, you know, drive-by, oh, I've been there sort of thing. Obviously, it's changed a lot in the last 40 years as well. So it was, I didn't recognise a lot of it. But it did sort of, even though specifically I didn't recognise, like, that particular house or that particular street or whatever, overall, it did have a very sort of familiar feel to it because I've been to Newcastle quite a lot, obviously, because I live nearby and everything. So, yeah, it was weird. It was like watching a home movie because I was so used to the things that I was seeing.
Yeah. And, I got not much else to say about this movie, so I guess we'll go straight into ratings. What do you give it for a rating 1 to 10?
I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay. Yeah, I'm right up there. But right around the same, but I give it about a 7 as well. I enjoyed it again. I had to watch it again. So,
There is a bit of lady slapping, just
for just there is to a bit warn. Of lady slapping, yes.
I was like, whoa, okay.
Gotta get that information somehow, come on now. Not like that, I don't condone lady slapping, but, you know, Michael Caine does it, I guess, you know.
He ended up getting information by having sex with them as well, and that's a lot nicer way to go about it.
This movie sounds a lot more X-rated than it really is, people, you know, but he is...
I don't know, there's a fair bit of boob.
Yeah, there was a fair bit of boob in this movie for 71.
No, 70s movies went through a phase of having a lot of nudity in them.
Yeah.
Like Carrie and that sort of horror film.
Yeah, but like those were era. Some of those are pretty ugly boobs on Carrie, though. I'm not saying that, you know, all boobs are beautiful, but no. These were some pretty sagging titties for supposed to be teenage girls, you know.
That's the beauty of the movie industry. Sometimes they lie.
Yeah, though. Sometimes they do lie, yeah. Oh, boy. But that's about it for this one. We'll go right into my choice, which is filmed mostly in Chicago, being the Michael Mann-directed film Thief from 1981, I believe it is. I'll let you know in a second.
Oh, it is. I remember it was being... They were 10 years apart.
Okay, so 1981, then. It stars James Caan as a... The title role, I guess you would call it, he is a guy who is a used car salesman by day, but at night he likes to, he's a safecracker by night, basically, a really good one, and he gets hired by the mafia to steal some diamonds from this big vault, and it becomes a big ordeal with him and his partner, played by James Belushi, of all people, who's very Chicago, so I guess that's the biggest Chicago bit about this film, because I don't recognize a ton of places except for like a couple of bridges and stuff like that, like the main bridge on State Street and stuff like that, which is still pretty much looks the same, you know. Besides that, it's a lot of interior stuff, and, you know, there's some stuff on a beach that was filmed in California, but that's the boring locations for my film, guys. See how that works out? Mm-hmm. But it also starred Tuesday Weld as Jesse. It also starred Willie Nelson, which I wish I would have seen more of, as Okla.
Yes, we always need more Woody Nelson.
Definitely. It starred the great Robert Prosky as Leo, the mob guy, you know. Hey, Dennis Farina was in this movie too. That's pretty awesome. R.I.P. I like that guy. So, but yeah, he basically gets in over his head with these mob guys, and bad stuff happens, really, you know. What do you make about this movie?
It's not my favorite film in the world, I will admit.
Mm-hmm.
But I did, you know, it was a good little watch, you know, it was easy to watch, didn't get bored or anything like that, but I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it again. I really liked the camera work in this. I thought it was some interesting cinematography, especially in the opening sequence where you're sort of introduced to James Caan as this safecracker, and he's got this whole drill thing going on and all sorts of equipment, and there's... some unique and intriguing camera angles while he cracks open the safe. So I enjoyed that. As you mentioned already, there's a good soundtrack. My main issue, though, is there are no ladies. There is one woman in this, like, whole film. and she basically gets bullied into marrying him, and it's just not exactly what I would call romantic. So that was pretty much my main issue, was just the level of testosterone. Like, even 300 had like more of a female element in it than this does.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that, because Tuesday, Jesse, she's pretty much the only one in the whole film. But she plays a pretty, sorry about that, important part of the film, in my opinion, though, because there's a whole, not side plot, but the whole real-life plot of them wanting a baby and them trying to go adopt the baby, and that doesn't work out for them, which is, that scene is hilariously racist, because he basically tells the adoption agency that he's not good enough, but he'll take any color you got, basically.
Yeah. I don't care. I'll have a black one. That's fine. I was like, what?
They're fucking a whole box of crayons. You know, that was the thing in that movie.
Mm.
But yeah, their whole relationship was strange, especially towards the end there, where, of course, the mob boss he works for, he's got this job set up where he finally cracks a safe and he gets the diamonds out. Once he gives to him and he expects his payment, it goes sour, because the money he's supposed to get went to something else. And of course, these are mob guys, so they're not supposed to play clean anyway. So he has to take out his revenge in the most amazing way. And he has to basically kick his old lady to the curb just to keep her safe, I'd imagine, because he seemed like he was being a real asshole. But she had to get out of there right away. And I guess she wasn't getting that, you know?
Yeah.
The mob. Robert Prosky is an actor that I know from my childhood. You know, he played the toy shop owner in Home Alone 2. He played the projectionist guy in Last Action Hero. These really cheery, jolly fellows who you wouldn't think would be a mob boss in a movie, but this guy would go so far as like, hey, you need a baby? I can get you a baby. And then all of a sudden they got a healthy, white, bouncing baby boy waiting for him. And
maybe that's why he has the toy store. It's a cover so he can steal children.
Naturally. That'd be an excellent plot point to Home Alone 2. You know. Deleted scene, people.
Yeah. Oh, you think he's nice giving you a free bauble with doves on it, but no. He's singling you out to steal you.
Child labor laws, people. Who do you think made those turtle doves? A child just like you. Giving them to a homeless person. What's wrong with you?
I just got that image in my head now of this poor baby on some sort of weird machine building these baubles before they give him to James Caan.
Yeah, but like you said, the score was pretty awesome. It was scored by Craig Safan, who's a composer I enjoyed for a lot of years. I could, you know, tell you a lot of stuff that he did right now, actually, because he did anything from Nightmare on Elm Street 4 to The Last Starfighter to lots of stuff I enjoy that he would have done. He's had about 87 credits altogether. And it really made me want to put it on and go strut, especially at the end of that movie where he's just beating the shit out of people and he goes into shoot up all the mob guys. And then he gets shot in the chest and you think he's dead, but then he pulls that very pimp good, the bad, and the ugly move by pulling off the metal plate he had hidden underneath, and like, yeah, obviously they go with the puck now and strut amongst these dead bodies. That is like so fucking cool, Jimmy Caan. I want to be just like you, man. it was amazing. Like you said, the way it was shot, it was it's Michael Mann. It's hard to like Michael Mann sometimes, in my opinion. Either you like Manhunter or you don't. And I know people who don't like Manhunter. I'm not saying those folks are stupid, but they should give it another watch, in my opinion.
I love Manhunter. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. And this is the guy that gave us Miami Vice. So, you know, I'm an 80s person. So, you know, I watched a lot of Crockett and Tubbs back in the day. That was it was a lot of pop collars back in those days. You know, very, very cool guys. And, I really enjoyed myself watching this movie. I enjoyed the relationships. I wish there was more Willie Nelson and less Jim Belushi in this movie, because a lot of it's just Jim Belushi being Jim Belushi, and that doesn't work in a serious drama, you know. Yeah, it was a good time for me. You know, I just nothing I really didn't like too much about it. I heard there's a nice looking Blu-ray out there. I'm probably going to pick that up one of these days. But for now, I'm just going to leave it at that. And we'll do our scores. What are you going to give for a score, girl?
Like I say, didn't enjoy it as much as Get Carter, but it was a decent action flick, so I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10.
Okay. Yeah, I liked it a little more than Get Carter, actually. So with that, I'm going to give it a... I want to give you a... Bumler was now a 7.5, we'll call it. You know, I'm going to go with that. I liked it pretty good, and I would watch it again.
Cool.
But right after this, we'll come back and close out the show for you guys.
My name is X.
And I'm Cootie.
Please consider us your high priest
and priestess
of satanic cinema.
Join us on our podcast, Kiss the Goat, which will drag your soul through some of the finest
and worst
devil movies of the last 50 years.
Devils and demons, exorcisms and possessions,
cults and rituals, dogs and cats living together.
Is that a devil movie?
Maybe. Sort of.
I don't know, babe.
We'll talk about it later. Join us on the Horrorphilia Podcast Network every other week as we don our hoods and cloaks and
kiss
the goat.
It's a hell of a good time.
I knew you were going to say that.
Of course you did. It's in the script.
Hi, I'm Mike White.
And I'm Rob St. Mary.
And we're the hosts of the Projection Booth Podcast.
If you haven't heard of the Projection Booth, that's okay.
But we think it's time that you have.
We've been doing this for over 3 years now.
And we think we're doing a pretty good show.
Every week we look at a different film and put it in context.
We try to bring you interviews with the people behind the films.
Or experts on a subject matter covered in the film.
We don't specialize in any one particular genre or type of film.
We try to examine every aspect of cinema.
From every corner of the globe.
Even at 3 years, we barely just scratched the surface.
But we're ready. We're ready for you to listen to us.
That's right. Now's the time to give us a shot.
Download us through our free smartphone app.
Or through Stitcher, iTunes, Geek Juice Radio, Jackalope.
Or our website.
Projection-booth.com.
We'll keep making great shows.
Now it's your turn to listen to them.
Well, that's episode 9 of the books, people. As you heard from you might have heard some trailers. I'm not sure, because if they're in a foreign language, you may or may not have heard some trailers. But the film I chose, we're going to Thailand for episode 10, people. So hopefully don't find any dirty horrors or like that out there to play with, because we might get diseased and not come back. That'd be bad.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Was it very racist?
I don't know. These weird things happen according to The Hangover, so you know.
Oh, yeah, The Hangover. Well... That makes it okay.
No, that makes it definitely okay. Nah, I wouldn't say that. I don't like The Hangover all that much.
That is a fucking terrible movie. I couldn't even watch it all. I had to switch it off 10 minutes before the end before I died.
Where you died?
So bad.
But you're still with us today, and I am grateful you're still with us today.
Because I switched it off.
Okay.
It saved me.
Yeah, the one I chose was 2008's Chocolate, whose director I cannot pronounce, but it stars a young actress named Jija Yanin, who plays Zen, who is an autistic girl who basically lives next door to a martial arts studio and can mimic everything that they do, everything that she sees, so she learns to be quite the fighter. But when her and her brother find a list from their ailing mother of money that is owed to her, they go out to seek that money with lots of kicking and fighting and crazy consequences. And that's my flick for the Thailand show. What's your flick for the Thailand show?
I chose 13 Game of Death, which is a 2006 Thai movie, which just been released on Netflix, the remake, 13 Sins, which came out this year, I believe, which is the American version. And it stars someone called Krisada Sukhosol. I'm not sure on the pronunciation, so I apologize to any Thai people listening. But I think I'm not sure if he is Thai. He's like half American, half something, which is part of the character, which is why I've explained it. Basically, it's about this poor man who's having the worst day of his life. He's called Puchit and Fuchit even. He's been fired and he's in debt, and his mother keeps asking him for money that he doesn't have, but he doesn't have he has too much pride to admit that he doesn't have the money, and he's, you know, single and alone and miserable. And then out of nowhere he gets a phone call saying, if you do this thing, we'll give you 1,000 yen or whatever it was. So he decides to do it because, you know, why not? It's not that bad. And then after that, it's revealed that he's been chosen to play a game where he has to complete 13 challenges, each of which will give him a bigger cash prize because each one is more challenging than the last. And it's about these games and how he goes through them.
And then he fights the Hydra at the end. And, you know, no, I don't know if he does that or not. That sounds very Hercules, though. But
it does a bit. It is a little bit Trials of Heracles, but I don't think he was quite born to the task, quite like Hercules was.
So. You got anything you want to pimp, girl? Go ahead and do that now.
Well, today I did my I did my ice bucket challenge for Macmillan and MND, as ALS is called over here. I keep wanting to say ASL because I'm on the MSN generation, but that means age, sex, location, which is slightly different to what ALS means. So you can find that on YouTube. I also did my Crawl or Die review recently, which I've already mentioned, but, you know, again, on YouTube. And do watch the movie as well if you like the sound of it from what I've said, because... these guys could really do with being more well-known than they are, I think. Just the usual stuff. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook. On Facebook, I am The Emily Wood. All letters, just to keep it simple. Whereas on Twitter, I'm The Emily, TAGEMI1Y. So follow me, come say hi. Tell us what you think of the show. We get very few comments. We did get a lovely one recently. Someone told me that they enjoyed listening to the show. So thank you for that. Was it? I believe it was someone called Tristan. I'm going to double check because I have a terrible memory. I do apologize. Let's have a look. Yes, it was Tristan Martin. So thank you for your kind words.
Yeah, Tristan Nelly Martin, you crazy Feldman-loving mother trucker. I love that guy. He's he makes funny, very funny Photoshop pictures that make me laugh. And, you know, one of which was Corey Haim and Corey Feldman in the Double Dragon ad from the 80s, which was epic. You know, thank you for that. It made my day.
And he said, I remind him of Alice Lowe, who was in a movie that I reviewed on Terror Troop, actually.
Nice.
So if you go listen to that episode, we do Sightseers. It's me, Buzz Butcher, and Mulkey Hughes. And let me know if I remind you of Alice Lowe in that, because if I do, I'm probably slightly worried.
Yeah, usual stuff. You could find me on Twitter at GW. Come like our page. On the Facebooks.
Yes.
Come join the Cinema Beef Facebook group. We always accept new members. Getting back to swing of that again, so I'm happy about that. Just put out the episode yesterday, actually, episode 51, with a great guest, Cindy Sin Fallon. We did Lovely Molly and The Gray, and she brought some great insight into that episode, and I made me it's right in the title, and how I learned how to tolerate Eduardo Sanchez, because, you know, she made me like the movie a lot, way more than I would have if we had the conversation. So, and yeah, I'm having this little drive for iTunes reviews. So if you guys are listening and you guys want to win something like raffle style, I have two autographs I'm giving away. I have Blu-ray I'm giving away, and a vintage Dark Crystal trading card set from the 80s, you know, which I have sitting here. Yeah, that's nice, huh? Yeah. I don't like Dark Crystal, but, you know, I got it sitting here, so, you know.
Shh. You make it sound appealing. Don't say you don't like it.
People like the Dark Crystal. I'm just not that guy, you know. I love Jim Henson. I just don't like Dark Crystal, you know. But I acquired that some years back ago, and it's still sitting here in this plastic box. I figured, hey, somebody might get some enjoyment out of that and make it a gift to give to somebody. So, go. You have four chances to win. You could put in a review for one or all of these shows. Burn the Beard, of course. Cinema Beef, Sausage Fest Reviews, and the brand new Two Drink Minimum Commentaries, which is a part of the Legion Podcast Network. This is this show, too, by the way. If you just throwing it out there, you know. This is also a part of the Legion Podcast Network, because Bo said to put whatever you want up there. I was like, okay, you know, and I'll throw this up there, too, just because, so... If you guys want to look for us, you can go to legionpodcasts.com. And I usually upload there first, but then I will upload later to the regular RSS feed. So just for you iTunes users that are already linked to our RSS feed, I'm not leaving you guys high and dry. It's easier for me to upload there first, you know. But, yeah, you guys got four chances to win, so pony up some love for the bird here. Not so much me, but the bird needs some love sometimes, you know.
You need love too.
She's a lady. She gets sensitive about these things, okay, you know. I'm not as sensitive about these kind of things.
You lie. Anyway, you do all the work. I just come in and talk about penises for an hour and then go, then disappear again. You do all the editing and the uploading and everything.
That's all I ask for, okay? A good cock joke out of a tiny English woman. Yeah, I'm good for that, you know.
I'm putting that on my next Edinburgh Fringe poster. Oh, I cock joke from a tiny English woman.
I think you should. That's a great tagline. Oh, boy. What would the Lost Boys guy think? No, that's okay, though. But, yeah, as always, I don't have anything to say here for this end cap. We should come up with something for sure, though, just to close out the show with.
Yeah, we definitely need to do that.
If you have any ideas, let me know. Yeah. But I'll end this with a quote that Don Coscarelli gave me. Always keep your balls in the air. See ya.